das ein Ding?
Kabinta.
Kabinta.
For Triple Canopy, this is Ben Tausig. Welcome to the first podcast in a new series about the politics of urban sound called Bangkok is Ringing. Over the next year, I'll file dispatches from Thailand's capital through first-person reporting, field recordings, and analysis. Bangkok is Ringing will present stories of music, noise, and silence, the sounds people make and how they reverberate through the cities we live in, the pleasures of sound, and the battle lines drawn in our increasingly noisy world.
Have you had problems with noise in New York?
Yeah, there's this annoying car outside my apartment. Oh my god. Loud-ass brown music, just like... Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Brown music.
What do you mean?
Like, my culture.
Oh, okay.
Like, not American music.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Random language. Oh god, so annoying.
Do you ever complain?
No.
No?
I don't know. I wouldn't feel like a herb if I complained.
Like a what?
Like, I don't know, like one of those people who get annoyed for no reason. Like,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
But you know you can call 311 and, you know, try to get somebody to come out or something like that.
Everything makes sound. Every person. Every motion. Wheels roll on pavement. Music seeps through headphones. The audience murmurs at a film. Rainwater runs into storm drains. Even in total silence, we hear our blood circulating. As more people move to cities, which now hold more than half the Earth's population, sound accumulates, grows denser, amplified further still by technology. Sound pervades our lives. Residents of cities develop, consciously or not, elaborate strategies for managing their sonic environments, while their local governments enact noise codes to try to improve quality of life. Even those of us who think we're coping may be affected. Medical research tells us that prolonged exposure to loud sounds can contribute to high blood pressure, heart attacks, stress, and learning disabilities, not to mention hearing loss. Man-made noise even alters animal behavior. A 2009 study published in the journal Nature reported that commercial shipping has dissolved certain sound-damping chemicals in the ocean, making aquatic noise travel more readily. Dolphins, whales, and porpoises, which communicate orally, are faced with a confusing, perhaps life-threatening, cacophony. On land, news reports surface often about physical violence and even murder committed by neighbors fed up with sonic invasions. In 2009, a man in Tallahassee, Florida, was charged with assault after aiming a shotgun at two neighbors who he claimed were hammering at odd hours. Another man in Erie, Pennsylvania, threatened a hunger strike to protest the noise from a local pet food factory. Said the man, "I guess you could say it's either the noise or me." Sound can be vexing at a primal level, but it's not only a pollutant, it's also a resource. Musicians and other artists take the spaces of the city as an oral palette, creating sound installations or performing in creative places. Early in the 20th century, the Italian futurists heard symphonies in modern machinery. Max Neuhaus built a sound installation under a grate in Times Square. For years, Sonny Rollins practiced his saxophone on the Williamsburg Bridge.
You know all these sounds, you say, because I'm sure that subconsciously I change what I'm playing to blend with the sound of the train. It all has its effect.
Sounds also trigger memories and feelings. Certain voices make us feel at home, others far away. Music may be inviting or threatening. Advertisers and filmmakers design sound precisely for the power of its associations, its ability to evoke a sense of intimacy and desire. And so do the architects of public space. Shopping malls, hotels, and casinos, for example, all think carefully about how to entice patrons with sound, and then to direct their attention and even their movement once inside. Meanwhile, sounds also play a major role in protest. Historically, chanting was a way for people to signify their unity. In summer 2009, post-election malcontents in Tehran issued anonymous calls to each other across rooftops at night. Today, though, sound is also used to disrupt organized gatherings. Modern riot police can fire so-called sound cannons on crowds, as they did at the September 2009 protests against the G20 meeting in Pittsburgh, and in August during protests against the government in Bangkok. The ear-splitting noise forces protesters to disperse. Sound cannons literally silence dissenting voices. Over the course of the next year, Bangkok is Ringing will explore these topics and more in detail. Research on sound must move beyond a simple measuring of decibels and towards greater political and environmental sensitivity. It must be grounded in knowledge of history, power, and culture. A common and disappointing lesson of noise abatement campaigns is that silence is only ever an abstraction. The real world is messy, noisy, complex. For 1 year, we will immerse ourselves in the metropolis of Bangkok, where sound is both a problem and a resource. Bangkok is the epicenter of one of the world's most volatile national political scenes. Thai rulers have been ousted by coups 18 times in the past 80 years. Control of sound, including news broadcasts, street protests, music, noise, and rumor, has long been one of the key stakes in the struggle for control, development, and political expression. We will not try to silence the din, but to learn from it. The seeds for this project were sown in 2004, in Brooklyn, New York. For about a year, I went to church every Sunday at a storefront Pentecostal church in a poor, predominantly black neighborhood called Brownsville. One of the most fascinating things about the services was how readily sound bled through the walls, both into the church and out to the street. People walking on the sidewalk were sometimes lured into joining the congregation after hearing passionate worship or amplified sermonizing. On the other hand, prayer was always sonically interlaced with the street. Car stereos, voices, sirens, and the occasional roar of the elevated train. Bishop Austin opened and closed the front door at strategic moments throughout his services, now to advertise to passersby what was happening inside, then to keep the street noise from drowning out the service. In the following clip, the Holy Ghost contends with the JMZ train. There is no way of avoiding this conflict. The service simply has to be louder than the exterior sound. For the subsequent 5 years, I made recordings and conducted interviews with musicians, business owners, city noise control officials, and private citizens all around New York City. It became clear that sound has real material effects on mood, on commerce, on lifestyle. Things get especially tricky when people of different backgrounds, of different sonic ethics, live mouth to ear in densely clustered urban spaces. What follows is a resident of a 96-unit Brooklyn apartment building discussing the problem of noise in his living space, which, as you can hear from the interview, is cavernous and echoey. The resident lives on the first floor, next to the lobby, so he's more exposed to noise than anyone else in the building.
So does the noise keep you up?
No, but they go to sleep early, but it's annoying. They sit by my door, mm-hmm. They sit on this stand, when people come and get their mail, they gotta go through them, and they play basketball over here, roller skating, bike riding, and what's the other one? Yeah, bike riding and roller skating. Yeah. And a shopping cart they had yesterday.
Mm-hmm. So do you tell them to be quiet?
No, I don't tell them nothing, because you tell these kids something, the family come down, they all want to gangbang you.
In 2007, my girlfriend and I took a vacation to Southeast Asia, and I brought a sound recorder. Of all the places we visited, none was more fascinating than Bangkok. Here was a city whose greatest charm was, like New York, sensory excess. The sonic field is filthy with the stuff of global exchange and commotion. Hawkers enticing people to buy pirated DVDs. Auntie Anne's pretzel commercials playing incessantly on the elevated train. Traffic. The maligned accents of tourists from Europe, Japan, and the United States, as well as migrant laborers from Northeast Thailand. The rough come-ons of madams outside massage parlors. I chose to embark on a year of research in Bangkok in order to investigate, at a micro level, how sound functions in such a noisy place. In this recording, a blind man uses a lead pipe to echo navigate along the sidewalk, while a commercial blares on repeat from a pair of speakers in a nearby plaza. It is tempting to hear the sonic culture of Bangkok as evidence of the recent Western imposition of amplified technology, which violently overtakes the bygone strains of a quaint, ethnic past. And there is certainly a grain of truth to that idea, given the role of foreign powers in the city's development over the past 200 years. But listening to Bangkok reveals a story of a globalized city that is more complex than that one-way equation allows, and in fact, much more modern as well. In 1999, Bangkok cut the ribbon on a new, hyper-efficient mass transit system. The SkyTrain allows no street musicians, and its cars are whisper quiet. The most prominent sounds are the terse whistles of station security agents when riders step over the yellow line, clear electronic voices announcing station stops, and the jingles of television commercials in every car. The sonic order of the SkyTrain is conducive to clean, modern, global commerce, and to exacting control of riders. The voices of advertisers are amplified, and commuters can get straight to work. Meanwhile, commerce on the street below remains exposed to pollution, noise, and disorder. The SkyTrain draws a clear line between the lives of those soaring from suburb to skyscraper and those carting live eels or batteries or magazines hitched to coughing old motorbikes. The noise of Bangkok has been muted for the SkyTrain's passengers and papered over with Auntie Anne.
เป็นคุณก็ต้องทำแบบนี้เพราะรู้ว่าเพรสเซลของร้าน Auntie Anne's ทุกชิ้นเนี่ยมีชิ้นเดียวในโลกก็เพราะเป็นงานฝีมือที่สดอร่อยมีความพิเศษไม่ซ้ำใครทุกชิ้นอย่าลืมบันทึกความทรงจำแสนอร่อยไว้ก่อนทานนะคะ Auntie Anne's แสนฮิตแสนอร่อย
Tune in next time for our first report from Bangkok. April 13th is the Thai New Year, called Songkran. Temperatures typically reach well over 100 degrees, and people celebrate by dousing one another with water, drinking heavily, visiting temples, and lighting gargantuan fireworks. In recent years, the holiday has also been a moment of heightened political tension. With rumors of a coup beginning to circulate, this year is shaping up to be no exception. Thank you for listening to Bangkok is Ringing.